Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Macko and Cause podcast. Bob, the Toronto Blue Jays swept the Oakland A's yesterday. Everyone in Toronto is doing fantastic.
That is the lead. There's no two ways about it.
Here on the Rogers podcast, the Jays have won three in a row.
So this would be Sports Central?
Yeah.
Where the lead story was the big... Actually, Aaron Sanchez and his split finger's not so good. And Matt Shoemaker, apparently ACL.
Out for the year.
Yeah. So it was a bit of a tough day. The Raptors fixed things up, but the rest of it was a little bit grim yesterday.
Let's do it from a full weekend perspective.
Okay.
The Raptors won both games on the road.
Yep.
And the Leafs went 1-for-1 against a team that had 107 points this year. If you look at it that way... It wasn't a bad weekend.
TFC won an exciting matchup. The Marlies won.
Yeah.
The Wolfpack won.
The Wolfpack. Growl. Sure. All right.
Do you want to do a little shopkeeping before we dive in with the Leafs?
Yes. All yes. Right. You first off, you biked here today. Your first bike.
I did. So I want to make a quick thing. I'm not going to turn this into a bitch session. Just a quick thing here. For everybody who hates getting stuck behind the streetcar, I get it. Nobody likes it. You got places to be, and I respect that. But here's the thing. If you go flying around the streetcar real fast, there's a chance there could be a bike in the bike lane, which is not very big.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you cut into the almost non-existent territory that already exists because you're aggravated and you've also revved up because you're trying to get around the streetcar, you could hit somebody.
Yes.
I almost got clipped twice on the way over here, and that's on an Easter Monday morning.
Oh, that's right. It is light. Like, I'm looking at the Gardner. The traffic is lighter.
It's super light out there. And this woman who is in front of me by about 20 feet, it actually gave me some perspective because I watched a car do it, like try to get around a streetcar and zip, make the quick zip to the right.
Yeah.
And missed her by about 3 inches, I would say. Now, here's the thing. I get you're frustrated. I also get you probably don't like cyclists. I don't like them either.
Yeah.
They can be real jerks all the time. But here's the thing. It's not like sending out an angry tweet that you can delete later. If you get mad in your car and you overreact, you kill somebody. Mm-hmm. They die. They don't see their families again. Everybody cries. You probably, I'm going to guess, will feel bad about that, despite how much you may hate the left wing.
Yeah.
I don't know. So here's just my thing. Spring is coming. There's going to be a lot of cyclists out there. Take a moment before you go flying around a streetcar. That's all I'm asking.
I agree. My only pushback would be, we live in a society where liberals and Democrats also get just as frustrated in their cars as the right wing as well. Just, you know, the left, I think, are on bikes more.
Oh, thank goodness, Matt. You protected the conservatives. Because Lord knows they're taking such a thumping out there these days.
That's right. But also,
who's going to defend the rights of the poor conservatives and their enormous blue wave across our country?
Yes, because all liberals love cyclists when they're in their cars. No.
Okay. Hang on. I'm going to stop you here, Matt.
All right.
Do the liberals campaign on the idea that cars are the most important thing and we got to not have bike lanes?
Oh, no,
does the left wing say, let's get rid of bike lanes? Oh, no, wait. It was the right wing that said, bike lanes are stupid and they slow down traffic.
Yes, that's right.
So when I say, hey, right wingers who vote against the stuff that would keep cyclists safer, you can't turn around and say, well, let's be fair to both sides because both sides don't put out the same position.
Oh, no, they don't. You're absolutely right. That would be intellectually dishonest to say that.
I accept your apology.
My point was that when you're in a car, the thing about a car and road rage doesn't know left or right. It doesn't know red or blue. Road rage just knows rage.
I think that's fair.
That's my point.
Okay, and I will flip this back to you.
Yeah.
While that is true, and I concede that point, when you're at the voting booth and you decide to vote conservative, you're saying, I don't want to put in the safeguards that might protect people from that road rage because I don't care enough about their rights versus mine.
Yep, fair point.
Absolutely. Fair point?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why I brought up conservatives.
Yeah. And to everyone driving, remember, you're in a rush. You know what really slows your day down? Even if you just clip a bike, you're going to, you know, unless you're the worst human being and you do the hit and run, but during the day, hard to run, a lot of witnesses, there'll be the police, you're going to have to sign stuff, you might go to jail, and that's going to make it difficult for you to make that 10-15 meeting. So also keep that in mind when you're violently driving on the road, that it actually will if you do something bad, you're going to be super late.
Now, before we move on to the lease, which we'll do in 30 seconds, I want to point out that Matt is actually one of the best drivers I've ever seen.
Nice.
And not like if there was anybody who was going to behave irresponsibly, I would trust Matt to do it more than most because he's enormously gifted behind the wheel.
Yeah.
But Matt is the most considerate and thoughtful guy out there on the road. You never take stupid chances.
Nope.
You always, you know, I've watched you rev it once. Mm-hmm. Once when we were kids, like maybe 15, 20 years ago, you got a new car. You're like, want to see how fast it can go?
Yeah.
We were on the DVP?
On, yeah, we were getting on the on-ramp from McCowan on the 401 West. And when I did that, it was also like my eyes darted around like there's no cars on the highway. For a couple seconds, we can go 150. We'll be fine.
It was literally the only time I ever saw you go truck nuts.
Yeah. Truck nuts. By the way, whoever invented that, like, they need to be struck violently in the throat.
I don't know. I kind of have this respect for it, though. Like, you want to give your truck a set of nuts?
But think about it, like, I want to be there at the point of Genesis. Like, when there was the epiphany, when someone's like, wait a minute. What's missing here? As they're looking at a truck in front of them, and they're like, testicles. Testicles are missing. That's what's missing in this world.
It's got to be a truck. Like, you can't really have Kia nuts.
No.
You can't have Hyundai nuts.
No, there's no Prius. There's no electric car, you know, for the environment and your enjoyment of looking at balls.
All right. Speaking of balls, so we're going to game 7.
Yep, of course
we
are.
In Boston, of course you are.
Of course we are.
Do you want to talk about the grief that you got over
my God, it's hilarious.
Completely reasonable prediction.
Yeah, like, it's, and I get it. People don't like Debbie Downer. And I threw out a tweet yesterday and I said, hey, it's not meant to be negative or Debbie Downer. It wasn't even really meant to be an indictment of the Leafs. It just meant to be that history was screaming, this was going to go 7 because this series always goes 7. The players may change, but Boston and Toronto is going 7 games. And the funny thing is, if the Leafs had lost on Friday, I would have been like 100% guarantee the Leafs are winning on Sunday because this series is going to go 7. A lot of people got angry. There's a couple that really take it personally, which always makes me feel odd because, like, you don't know me. Why do you have such an emotional connection to what I'm doing, like, to that level?
I don't get a lot of angry tweets. I don't know why, actually, because I put out some pretty angry stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't get a lot of angry tweets, but when I do, I only block people who make it personal. Mm-hmm. Whenever somebody disagrees with me, I actually make a point to tweet them back.
Yeah.
If they've not been personal about it.
Yeah.
Towards me.
Yeah.
Then we've opened up a dialogue in the marketplace of ideas.
Yeah.
That's what you were doing, Matt. You were just throwing out a hypothesis.
I was. I don't believe
a correct one, I might add.
Think about the here was my controversy that the Maple Leafs, who haven't won back to back since early March, and that early March win was when Calgary's David, I think it's David Rittich, I always can't pronounce his last name, was horrible. Tyler Ennis had a hat trick. That was the last time the Leafs got back to back wins. So now you're expecting to do it here against a Boston team that's pretty good. I felt pretty good thinking the series is going 7.
Good team, very experienced, well coached. And for about 10 minutes, it looked like I was going to be right in my prediction, which was Leafs in 6.
First 10 minutes, they looked great. They were dominant. Like, the first 10 minutes, I remember I made a note, even before Riley scored and then afterwards, I'm like, Anderson has yet to really be challenged. Boston has yet to throw some significant heat at the Leafs goaltender. Then that all changed because of one simple thing. Penalty kill.
So we might as well dive in there because if I don't know if it's the story.
Oh, it's the story.
But
it's number one.
It's as close to the story as there is just because they're at 56% in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Only Tampa Bay's been worse. Tampa Bay got swept. Mm-hmm. And they just don't seem to have an answer in some games. In other games, they do. Like in game 5, they were, you know, Boston was 0-for-3.
Yeah.
On the power play.
The last 3 playoff years, Toronto's either been last or second last in penalty kill. And Michael Landsberg's son, Corey, and we're going to talk about the Landsbergs because you were over there for some Easter shenanigans. Corey sent this out. He's like, no team, their home penalty kill is like 26%.
It's insane.
We've never seen that before from any playoff team. And it's small sample size, 3 games. And that's incredibly small sample size. But this is embarrassing. There's no other way to put it. It's embarrassing.
Now, it needs to be said that Boston's power play is really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. They zip that puck along beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've made the point to this series that Babcock, for all the questions going in and the Bab clock that he may or may not be on, I think has made some really smart decisions. Some not so smart, and we'll get to Marlowe and Brown in a second.
Yeah.
But this is a coaching thing, right? Like, when you look at special teams, more than, say, run of five-on-five play, where there's so many incidentals, like, this is where you actually have a system, you build a structure, and you try to adjust.
Yeah.
Now, Zach Hyman has lost 16 of 21 faceoffs. Now, you're facing Patrice Bergeron, who is a terrific faceoff man, but do you think at some point, if you're 16 for 21, that maybe Babcock would look at that and say, maybe the forward should stop getting cannibalized by the opposition in the faceoff circle, thereby giving the other team possession in our end and giving them an immediate advantage?
That would seem to make sense.
I would throw that out there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And there was some chatter about just how it's better that the Leafs are on the road because Babcock doesn't take advantage of last change. I can't even delve into that because I feel like I would need to talk to some like the super smart scouts or former coaches that can point out directly what's going on. So I'm not even going to go there, but you're absolutely right about the Zach Hyman. If the penalty kill is that bad, I'm sorry, then yeah, then there's going to be blame going on everyone.
What's interesting about this to me is if they lose game seven, and they might not, it's a crapshoot, but if they lose and the penalty kill is also bad in that game, people will be more inclined to blame the coaching staff than the players, because it'll feel like the players at 5-on-5 have done their job.
They've done their job.
Dominant for large stretches of five on five.
They've been the better team in this series. 5-on-5, the Leafs have been clearly the better team.
Right. And so you can look at, like, Kyle Dubas can look at his roster and say, wow, we went toe to toe and better against a really, really good Boston team.
Yeah.
We're that close to being an elite team. Mm-hmm. And then you look at it and go, oh, we lost. Well, how'd that happen?
Yeah.
Oh, it must have been the coaching system? Now, I don't know that it's that simple. I don't want to pretend that it's that simple. I'm just saying they'll be more inclined to say Babcock blew this if the special teams are the big answer.
Yeah, oh, 100%. The Heat will ratchet up. Of course, it needs to be said, on one level, this would be the biggest blown opportunity, because if the Leafs win, there's no more Boston. There is no more Tampa. There's no more Winnipeg. There's no more Calgary. Washington doesn't have TJ Oshie.
Which is a big one, too.
Which is a big one. No more Malkin and Crosby. Like, all of that is gone. It's suddenly if the Leafs beat Boston, by a lot of analytics groups, the Leafs would then become the favorite to win the Stanley Cup.
Well, in theory, they would be, because they're the third seed.
Mm-hmm. But right? I don't know how it works with seeding, because the Islanders finished.
Yeah, I know. It is weird. And you're right. They would be seeded behind.
But anyway, the Leafs would be, even with the Islanders there, the Leafs would be considered the favorite to win the Stanley Cup, which, imagine someone telling you that on April 25th, the team with the best chance to win the Cup is the Leafs. We'd all freak out. But it also needs to be said, I feel like we're almost, are we allowed to be upset when you consider what happened to Winnipeg or Tampa? Or, you know, even to a lesser extent, Pittsburgh. Like, teams getting swept, you know, or just losing in agonizing fashion. There's a lot of sports pain going on right now in hockey markets all across North America.
I'm glad you brought this up, because, at least for me, I'll speak from my own perspective. I feel like there's a lot less at stake in this Game 7 than there was last year, which should be the reverse.
Really? It should be the reverse.
It should be the reverse. But here's the thing. What we've learned from Game 7s are, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
There's so much luck involved. You know, the Leafs could lose based on a lucky bounce. A puck bounces off someone's skate.
Yep.
You know, or rings off the post at an opportune or inopportune time. This is really where it becomes a game of inches. Like, can you look at this and say, whichever team wins this Game 7, well, they were clearly better.
No.
Like, they've played each other to a standstill. Yeah, and like, Boston's a really good team.
Yeah, like, I think if someone said, Matt, you've got to pick, who's been the better team? I go, well, the Leafs. By how much? 52% to 48. You know, like, maybe 51 to 49.
Sure, yeah. Right? Like, flip a coin. Mm-hmm. If Freddie Anderson has a bad Game 7, is anyone going to say, well, he clearly doesn't have it?
Nope.
No, because he's been great in the first six games.
Yeah, Anderson could show up in a Garrett Sparks game-worn jersey and give up seven goals, and we're not allowed to be angry with Frederick Anderson because of the playoff series he's had.
So let's do the roll call here. Morgan Riley, if he's the GOAT in Game 7, does anyone care?
Nope.
Austin Matthews? He's been awfully good the last two games. He's been the best player the last two games.
Yeah, he has been. He has been.
I don't think if he has a bad game seven, I don't think anyone's going to say Austin Matthews doesn't have it.
No, but
Tavares.
Interesting thing about Tavares, but I was trying to find the numbers. Like, do you know Mitch Marner has no shots on goal
in the last two games?
In the last two games, which is weird. And I think like Tavares has only one goal, and that's an empty netter. But his defense has been so good that,
and he's playing up against the best line in hockey.
Yeah, you're right. It's
quote
unquote. It's a good point. Like, who's going to really get it? I think Matthews would get some. Nylander will get a lot.
See, this is interesting, and I'm glad you came here. I feel the default answer for the Toronto Maple Leafs fan so often is, I hate that Nylander.
Yeah.
Right now, my uncle Terry drove a cab in this city for 50 years.
Yeah.
Loves his hockey. Hates Nylander and Justin Trudeau more than any two people on the earth. For similar, oddly similar yet different reasons.
And I would argue that both have done the same amount of damage to this country.
Uncle Terry, you've lost weight.
Yeah.
He's sitting here before me. But, you know, Nylander has actually played pretty well. He's just playing with bums.
Yeah.
He's played pretty well, Matt.
He has, except for
generating shots.
He's generating shots, and that's lovely. But at some point, and process means more in the regular season. I'm sorry, this is unfair, but in the playoffs, results mean more. To generate shots and chances and win possession, which Nylander has done on a pretty consistent basis, which is remarkable considering he's playing with Brown and the corpse known as Patrick Marleau. However, the top-level talent, which is what Nylander demanded to be paid as and held out for, the top-level talent, they convert. And Nylander hasn't done that.
Okay, so he's playing out of position. Because he's a natural winger.
Yep.
He's playing center.
Oh, I know. I know right? The degrees, I know the degrees are difficult.
Right. So there's that.
Yep.
He's playing with two guys who have no offensive skill whatsoever. Connor Brown could be on a breakaway with an empty net in front of him and he would dump it in the corner.
Well, that's a smart play. You know, you gotta
get pucks in deep. Marleau is a step slow. He's like the Bruno Caboclo. He's two steps slow from being two steps slow.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So
we've officially hit. I almost feel bad. Like Marleau, even though what he's doing on the ice is not at all helping the team, everyone is now collectively starting to feel bad for him, even though Marleau is taken away from our sports happy.
You know, you can feel less bad for him, put him on the fourth line.
Yeah.
Congrats to Stephen Birch for actually doing the math on this, because you got to love the math. He played, with the exception of Austin Matthews, more minutes in the final five, down by one yesterday, than any other Leafs forward.
Mm. Really?
What the F?
Really?
What the F?
Oh.
More time. I kept watching, thinking, okay, here's Marlowe's last shift. At about the 6-minute mark, I started yelling at the TV, I don't want to see him anymore.
Yeah.
Just start double shifting the top two
There's
lines.
You and Terry yelling at the TV for different reasons.
Yeah, that's right.
By the way,
Which is also on Babcock. That's the other one that's going to really stick to him if they lose.
Let me do a heel turn here. Is this on Marleau? Should Marleau turn around over his shoulder and go, no? Like when the coach says, get on the ice, Marleau should be like, coach.
A conscientious objector?
Yeah, conscientious objector. Like, coach, I got to be a leader here. You don't want me out there. No one, even my cute family. And then he shows a picture of the family with, you know, with Matthews and Marner and Jam Jams. And they're going, no one in this photo wants me out there.
You see those guys over there?
Yeah.
34, 16, all those guys?
Yeah.
They depend on me.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm not doing this.
I mean, throw Ennis out more. I don't care. Just, you know, I'm not going out there.
So I want to throw this out. I want to table this because I feel like the same thing's happening this year as happened last year, which is we don't have Nazem Kadri out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really discussed a ton during the run of play. But I feel like the anger we direct at Nylander probably should be directed at Kadri.
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't do that stupid move, then Nylander is available to play the wing with him. That third line is much more dangerous at that point.
When Nylander scored, it was because of a beautiful pass from Kadri,
who is a very talented player.
Yeah.
And this was a perfect series for him in a lot of ways. Not just because he has the sandpaper and blah, 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 but he's good.
Yeah.
He's good. And if they were going to double down on the top two lines, this is where, like, when you took him out of the lineup, the advantage of depth really diminished because you took a really good winger and you forced him to play center. You took not offensive guys in nature, and you moved them up. These teams are so close together. I feel like as much as we want to be pissed at Nylander for not doing his job, it's actually Kadri's fault.
Well, Bob, I think there's enough blame to go around for both. And to add to your point, though, without Kadri, not only does it make the third line less dangerous, it neuters some of Nylander's offensive ability.
Right.
But it also, on top of that, if you needed to double shift or if you want to do a little, you know, line juggling, well, it no longer allows Nylander to play with Matthews. And the numbers scream that Matthews at his best has Nylander on one of his wings.
So take last night. It's 3-2. There's 5 minutes left. And you don't have the nuclear option to go to. You can't just stick Nylander up there with Matthews and hope that, you know, over 45 seconds they can really hem in Boston and make something happen.
Yep.
That just isn't there. Now you're relying on Kapanen and Janssen.
Yeah.
Who have been, you know, Kapanen's been better, but he's not Nylander.
Nope. No. Oh, no. Absolutely. So, yeah, no, it's absolutely the domino impact of Kadri is definitely felt. I'm not letting Nylander off the hook.
You know, I would say that Tavares has scored one goal in six games.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's played a terrific all-around game. I'm not disrespecting him.
Yeah.
How many goals does Nylander have?
One.
Right. So they have the exact same number of goals.
Yeah, except...
Except
for Tavares is shutting down the number one line. Nylander's been sheltered playing against the Bruins' third line, which, in essence, is
He's skating with two bag of pucks.
I know, but it's not like the third line of Boston, you know, are guys that are eventually going to be
Charlie
going to the
Coyle's been playing better. Marcus Johansson, Sean Corrales back, and so you're moving him up. I get it. It should be a point of strength.
Yes.
But that was diminished greatly when Kadri decided to get his stick out and get a little bit of satisfaction for himself.
If I'm doing the pie chart of blame, the slice for Kadri is larger than the slice for Nylander. Absolutely. I'm just saying that Nylander's plate, it ain't going empty.
You know, I think it's fair, although I always question the line of argument that says, that player needs to be better without looking at everything around them.
Well, I'm looking at everything around
them. Like Matthews wasn't that good last year in the playoffs, and he needed to be better. That's fair.
And he got rightfully criticized for it.
But also, were his wingers as good as they are this year? No.
Oh, no, I know.
These things don't happen in isolation.
I understand that, but I also don't understand the idea that Nylander, we're going to... I think sometimes people protect Nylander too much because of your Uncle Terry. So then other people around, they overcompensate and they swing so far to the other side. You know, it's like, what was the most popular music? Glam rock. And then, what was it? Nirvana. Why? We swung way too much to the other side.
I think that's a fair point.
I think that sometimes happens to Nylander.
That's a fair point. I think that... I'm probably coddling him a little bit because he makes $7 million a year and Pastrnak was his comparable.
Yeah.
And Pastrnak looks a hell of a lot better.
If you switch Pastrnak with Nylander...
I like our chances.
I like our chances. Having said all this, like on the one level, man, they've wasted Frederik Andersen and what he's done. They've wasted wasted that opportunity on Sunday. I still think the Leafs are winning Sunday. I got him winning.
I honestly have no idea.
Well, no one has any idea about anything. I mean, that's the one thing. Like I said before, the only thing we know about the playoffs is that Leafs and Bruins are going seven. Beyond that, nobody knows nothing about nothing. And that's been my theme for the last couple of days on air.
And that's right. It's just it's a game of bounces. You know, you look so smart when they go your way and you look so dumb when they don't. Like how many times do you watch the replay back and somebody misses the net by 2 inches?
Yeah.
And it could have gone the other way.
Could have gone the other way.
That save on Bergeron.
Oh, my God.
If they had won that game yesterday, we'd remember that save forever.
Yeah.
The save that saved the team.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We'll come back to the Leafs again later because I actually want to play a game called Boston is the Night King Who Survives Game 7.
And we will get into that. Speaking of the king of lawyers is Jeff Pollock. If you need a lawyer, you should use ours. He will defend you. He would defend William Nylander. He'll defend the cyclists. Anyone who needs defending, you go to Jeff Pollock. And you know what? He's so good, he'd defend the guy in the SUV. You wouldn't want him to, but he has to by law, though he would kill him inside. Jeff Pollock at jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. He's our lawyer. He should be yours. jeffpollock.com, 416-777-0088. That number again, 416-777-0088. 877-0088. He's so good. He even managed to rope Bob and his wife to come in to deal with their will and testament. And I don't even know what the difference is between will and last testament, but I know it's all there in the legal world.
What's the difference between an attorney and a lawyer?
I think it's the same
thing. And a barrister and a solicitor.
Ooh, I don't know. We should ask. You know who would have the answer to that?
Jeff Pollock.
Yeah.
Hit us up on our Instagram account, Jeff. Let us know.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you want to go to next, buddy?
Game of Thrones.
All righty, then. What'd you think of last night's episode? By the way, we should say it before you answer.
Yeah.
Spoilers. We're just going to spoil the
whole
thing.
Spoilers. We're like 25 minutes into the pod. We're going to be here for about 5-6 minutes.
Maybe more.
Maybe more. So just, you know, hit that button if you want, you know, that like 30-second fast forward a couple times. And, you know, if you hear the word dragon or Daenerys, then keep hitting the skip if you want us to get back to the Leafs. Or maybe the Raptors, who, you know, dominated Orlando as expected.
Looked pretty good.
Looked pretty good.
All right, so what'd you think of last night's episode?
I had no problem at all, the slow burn. I'm sure you as the artiste loved it because you love the slow burn.
I thought it was a little dull in spots. But mostly good.
Yeah, because the thing is, we know what's coming. So you're always like, oh boy, it's going to come. And you know what they were doing? Like, you know what last night's episode was?
It was burlesque.
It absolutely was burlesque. But there was it was cathartic. Like seeing Tyrion and Jaime and all these people around the fire, and Tyrion brings up the point, wow, all of us at one point, we used to battle against the Starks. And now here we all are at Winterfell, like...
I wish dear old dad was here to see this.
Yeah, like, that was funny. Tyrion talking about how, I didn't want to die here. And like, but just does it so nonchalant. Like, he's treating his upcoming death like he just ended up at a hotel that has got bad water pressure. He's like, ugh, I can't believe we're here again. We're in Winterfell. Everyone's ugly. They're spitting at us. Zombies are about to kill us. Ugh.
Can we make a general note? We'll come back to this in a second, but a general note about the people at Winterfell. Not a lot of grooming going on.
Not a lot of grooming. No.
Everybody's just, it's like, it's the medieval version of track pants.
Yeah. Oh, they are.
Everyone's pretty comfortable with themselves.
That is a good way to put it. Winterfell, the Game of Thrones version of track pants. Yeah, they...
You know, the Lannisters are walking around in their fancy armor, yeah. And, you know, the... Grey Worm is walking around in his fancy armor.
There's
and then
scented perfumes, and you know that that's going on. And you know there's a lot of stink under every undercarriage in Winterfell. Oh, my God.
So I got a couple questions for you.
Yeah.
But this really hit me last night. The episode was very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
It was satisfying in the sense that these relationships that we've watched build over 7-plus seasons,
yeah,
they're not resolving. They kind of did last night. Like, you're sort of prepared for pretty much everyone who talked to die.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Not Sansa, not Arya. I think they're going to live. Arya might not.
You know, Arya might. No, she did the horror movie thing. She had sex.
I know.
Which means now
if she lit up a joint, it would really be over.
Voorhees. Voorhees. The Jason Voorhees bat signal went. It's like, what?
The Night King's going to pull on a hockey mask.
By the way, I have to say, it was good. And replaces a spear with a machete. I didn't want to see Arya naked. Like when she disrobed,
I'm like, I kind of averted my eyes.
Yeah. Like usually I'm all for the nudity, but I'm like, I've seen you since you were a kid. I watched you grow up. I'm like,
She's supposed to be 18. Yeah. It was almost the reverse of the 80s sex comedy where there are like 17-year-olds in the movie that get naked, but they're really 35 in real life.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, allows you a moral shield. But yeah, it feels like everything, like so many things did get satisfied in the conversations and just the humanizing of all these people.
Yeah, it was great. There was a lot of great conversations.
Yeah.
But here's what it made me wonder. When it comes to Game of Thrones, do you want a happy ending?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer is you want a satisfying ending.
But that can mean a lot of
that
things.
That can mean a lot of things.
In order to be satisfying, do you have to feel good about the way things resolved for these characters? And I throw this out, Matt. One of the reasons this show became so popular is no one was safe and horrible things happened to good people.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt very real
and
sometimes really depressing. Like, there were moments during this show where you're like, God, I don't know if I... Like, when Jon Snow died.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he came back. But when he died, I remember thinking, I don't know if I can keep going through this.
Oh, yeah.
I keep getting dumped by all these characters I fall in love with. So yeah. I throw it back to you.
Yeah.
Do you want a happy ending, or do you want Game of Thrones to stay down the path of nobody's safe and you won't be satisfied?
It depends who wins. Let's say at the end... You know, at the end of it all, there's Tyrion, and he's right about to be the ruler. Then he gets a crossbow to the head, and here comes Cersei, who's we thought is dead and is not. And she's like, na 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 na. Then, I mean, I might take some grim satisfaction, but you know, I'm going to say it right now. I've committed a lot of time. I got no problem with a happy ending. You know what? Life is short. I know you know, we need to go full, you know, artiste Fellini film, black and white, and nothing means nothing, and you know, life's unfair. But part of me wants, you know, a parade, some high fivings. I want some like aggressive man hugs. We're like, you son of a bitch, I thought you were dead. You son of a bitch, I thought you were dead. Let's have some mead. Like, part of me does want that. I don't care. I'm going to admit it.
I know. And I kind of asked knowing that.
You knew the answer.
I knew what your answer would be. And you know what mine will be?
Yeah, yours is going to be everyone dies. Like, you're going to be much more Eeyore.
I don't want everyone to die necessarily. Uh-huh. I want everyone to suffer. And that's what makes it even worse.
Oh, that's delightful. No, have they suffered enough? Like, who on the show has skated? Like, who on the show?
Nobody. You know? Nobody. But that's the whole point, is that's the world.
Yeah.
That's the universe. I want them to stay true to their universe.
Okay, let them suffer.
But what happened at the end of The Sopranos?
Tony dies.
Bang. Yeah. Done. Yeah. What happened at the end of Breaking Bad?
Well, Walter White dies.
Now, I think Breaking Bad has the greatest final season mm-hmm. of all the big shows.
Yeah.
The way they resolved, they knew it was the last season. They wrapped it up. We never really know what happened to Jesse. He may have made it. He may not have.
They're looking to do a spinoff. I think it's in the works.
It's funny you say that, because the reason why I think your way is going to win mm-hmm. is because I'm sure HBO looks at Game of Thrones and says,
cha-ching.
Yeah, we got our Star Wars here, gang. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to go full Disney on this. And I want spinoffs.
Yeah.
I want Cersei's show.
Oh, yeah.
I want Arya.
Yeah. Yeah. I want Cersei's show to just be, you know, just her doing wine tasting. It's like Cersei travels around the Seven Kingdoms, and it's like a travel tourism show. It's just her just going to wineries. Don't worry. She'll still stab people. You know, if the
wine's no good.
Yeah. If it's like, this wine is flabby. I'm going to stab you in the flabby part. You're dead.
Now, this show received criticism for taking too much joy in the suffering of its characters. And I think there are times where that was merited. I think some of the stuff with Ramsay Bolton and Sansa got a little gratuitous. Also, well, it didn't get a little gratuitous. It was gratuitous.
And also the Red Wedding. Did you need to stab where the baby was in the pregnant woman?
But
kind of just stabbed her in the head.
But that's what made the show different.
Mm-hmm.
From the very first episode when he says, and you heard the callback throughout last night, the things I do for love and shoving Bran out the window.
Yep.
You just knew I've entered a world where everything is the third rail.
Oh, absolutely. The first episode was head trauma, incest, and child murder.
Right. Which literally none of those things were permissible beforehand.
By the way, if I may for a second.
And I'm sure you will.
If Jaime had pushed Bran off the wall again, totally fine with that.
Can you imagine
Bran
that?
Oh my God. Everyone would be so happy because Bran has been a nothing burger. Just nothing.
I actually grew to like him in episode two. Episode one, I thought all the cutaways to staring Bran got a little much.
Guess what there was in episode two? Cutaways to staring Bran.
Yeah. But he's the guy. He's like the guy who tells it the way it is. We don't have time for this.
Yeah.
The Night King is coming.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah. Okay, I will say that, but I will agree with you, but the bar is so low that as long as Bran says something that isn't, I'm not blank, I'm not Bran, I'm not your brother, I'm someone else, if he says anything but that, suddenly we're all like cooing little puppies.
It is true. Although I like the fact that they're going to use him as bait. I think that's good. Do you find it weird? I've heard this theory floated out there that there's a connection between Bran and the Night King because they look kind of similar.
Yeah.
Do you buy that?
I'm not smart enough to buy it because I'd have to really do a deep dive into Game of Thrones. Ooh, here's how I want it to end.
Okay.
Just Bran dies. Let everyone else lives. Let Bran have just a horrible death.
It was the most amazing military victory in history. They did not lose a person.
It's going to be like just, but it's so curious. Like, Does the Night King get defeated so then it can be Sansa versus Daenerys versus the Starks again?
Okay, so let me ask you, because here's my other question for you. So we know your position on the happy ending.
Yeah.
You want one.
Yeah.
Who's the final big bad? Is it A, the Night King, B, Cersei, or C, Dany? Who's the most likely final big bad?
Not the Night King. Night King doesn't have enough personality. And we don't have the same emotional connection. It has to be one of the two. It's Dany, because Dany's been the good one, the hero, rescue John, all these things. But you could see, you know, she wondered if John was lying to her when John said, yeah, I actually am, you know, the real true heir. And by the way, once again, none of them, John nor Daenerys, brought up, ooh, gross, we slept with each other. It immediately went from, we don't care about incest. It went to, oh, you've got the most legitimate, you know, claim to the crown. I think in the end, she'll be the heel turn.
It was interesting you pointed that out, because in the previous scene between Dany and Sansa,
yeah,
she talked about how much she loved him and who really is leading who.
Yeah.
But she was trying to ingratiate herself to Sansa. When it really came down to it, though, her first question was, when confronted with this illicit affair
what
that they're having,
to the North if we all
win? What about me?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, no, no. When she was talking to Jon Snow, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. She was just like, what about me? What's this? You're going to take my crown from me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She immediately jumped there.
Yeah.
They've been setting that up. I thought one thing they did really brilliantly was all the times they made someone else feel like the final say. Like, they didn't look to the queen when they were talking to Jaime Lannister. Mm-hmm. Sansa basically said, this meeting's over.
Yeah.
And when they were having the military meeting, Jon Snow basically said, okay, everybody get some rest.
Yeah.
And both times Dany was sort of like, that's my job.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the one in charge here. Remember?
I'm the decider.
Remember when I saved y'all from the White Walkers and I lost a dragon doing it?
I wonder.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to throw this out. This would not be a happy ending.
Yeah.
But what if Daenerys is responsible for Jon's death? Like, she has the chance to save him in a situation, but doesn't.
Yeah.
Because she knows with him gone, her path to the crown is uncontested. With him alive, he's got a better claim than she does. What if she kills Jon Snow? Or more importantly, lets him die when she could have stepped in?
Okay. Is Daenerys, is she Matt Damon from The Departed, where everyone thinks that Matt Damon's, you know, the audience doesn't, but the characters think that he's a good guy, but, you know, he's actually evil, and he eventually kills Leo DiCaprio because he wants to have the power and stuff. You know, is that sort of this, where Matt Damon could have let some of the characters in Departed live, but he, you know, killed them all, and then, you know, he
to
got
protect
killed.
Himself.
But I wonder if there's a good chance she could go full Matt Damon in The Departed, and like, I could save you, but I'm not going to.
I don't know how they resolve that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like they can do it happily, because if they try to resolve that happily now, people will call bullshit.
Yeah.
They've seeded too much potential dissent to have it simply go away because they fought together.
Yeah.
So someone's got to go.
Someone's got to go.
Jon Snow is the tragic hero.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's going to be Jon, and it could be a Sansa versus Dany send-off. It could be a Sansa versus Dany versus Cersei Tarantino showdown at the end.
Yeah, that's a good point. Jon Snow could actually, because that would be because Jon Snow never cared about power, never was ambitious. He just wanted to make sure everyone's safe and protect everyone and then get on with his life.
His destiny is to sacrifice himself for his people.
Yes.
That's his destiny. I don't know how it's going to happen, but they got 90 minutes, and I would not be shocked if at the end of it, Jon Snow really was dead.
Okay. Well, instead of 10 minutes, I was 13 minutes of Game of Thrones.
Well, it's an important season.
I don't disagree. So to everyone who is staying away from spoilers or doesn't watch the show, hello. Real quick, because at least a little...
Sports, Wine, Life, Matt.
What's that? Sports, Wine, Life? Yeah.
You know, we don't need to apologize talking Game of Thrones for 13 minutes. Sports, Wine, Life.
Sports, Wine, Life. I 100% agree.
All right.
Usually you get a little more nervous about that kind of stuff.
Nah, well, yeah.
Yeah. little tip of the cap to the Raptors. Game 3 on Friday. Kawhi Leonard is bad because he's got the flu.
Which we didn't know.
Kyle Lowry had the best play of the game, but didn't have a great shooting game. Orlando went plus 13 in free throws, and Toronto still won. That was the moment. Like, when Kyle Lowry grabbed the key offensive rebound, with like 30 seconds, 20 seconds to go. The Raptors up by three. Orlando, they get that rebound. They got a chance to tie it. They miss that opportunity, and then they get blown out in game four. Orlando's chances of extending that series were at the end of game three on Friday night. They didn't do it because of Lowry. Series is over.
Do you remember we talked about the Detroit Pistons and what would be a fitting way to dispatch Dwayne Casey? And we said five games.
Yeah.
You give them one game.
Yeah.
You make one game close and some blowouts in the other ones. I think we're just on the cusp of that happening now with the Magic.
We are. Yeah, we are.
Right?
Yeah.
And it makes everyone feel a little better having blown out the Magic twice now.
Yeah. Two blowout wins, one close win, one odd loss. And it's important to win on Tuesday. I know it's not the same gravity as the Maple Leafs, but you win on Tuesday. It gives you a little bit extra rest before you take on Philadelphia.
Now, the Philly stat that's really interesting is they've gotten more foul calls than any other team of the final 16 of the playoff teams.
Yeah.
Why that is, I can't say. Maybe it's just luck or whatever, but the Raptors have gotten the fewest number of calls. So it's 1 versus 16 in the eyes of the refs.
Yeah.
And I think people are prepared to get very angry if that continues.
Oh, 100%. Hopefully. Part of this is, and this just because I've been doing a lot of the pre and post for the Raptors-Orlando game, so just a little bit more of a deeper dive on that. Orlando, this is one they were great defensively this year, and they were a team that just did not foul. So part of these numbers is just a continuation of what we've seen in the regular season. This is part of Orlando's style, just long, lanky defenders, Steve Clifford's way. But you're absolutely right that if we see that early on, there's going to be a lot of bitching.
It's interesting that the NBA has a television problem in the sense that the cameras pick up all the little fouls.
Yep.
And when Kawhi gets mugged on his way to the basket and there's no call.
Yeah.
We see Nick Nurse, who's always funny. Very memeable.
Nick Nurse went full operatic Sunday night.
It jaw literally hilarious. Dropped.
Yeah.
But we see that our best player is getting mugged. And even on the broadcast last night, you know, Jack was like, well, James Harden would get that call.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't they give it to Kawhi?
Yeah, Kawhi's on that level. Kawhi's on the Harden level.
You could have argued DeMar DeRozan hasn't earned that call in the playoffs because DeMar is a second-tier star. But Kawhi is a top-tier star.
Yep.
Somewhere between 5 and 10 in the whole league.
Yeah.
So why doesn't he get it? And then you start to ask yourself, well, is it simply a Toronto thing? Because it's not like Orlando is a marquee franchise.
No, they are not.
Right?
They're
nobodies.
The NBA does not want Orlando to win. This is one of the few times where America is rooting for a Canadian team. Because you can't make Aaron Gordon sexy. It would be like the former dunk champion taking on Joel Embiid. That will not sell.
Yeah, he's played really well, though.
I'll say
Go ahead. Okay, you say your thing, and then I got a question for you.
Okay, because, you know, everyone in the NBA... Every GM and owner should be rooting for Toronto over Philly because Toronto versus Philly is the ultimate tank team, trust the process, lose 60-plus games for many, many years, versus the Raptors, who don't have a high first-round draft pick. Like maybe Marcus Gasol is now. I'd have to find out where he was drafted.
I think he was third.
Okay.
No, Powell was third.
Powell, I forget. No, Gasol was later than that.
Yeah, Gasol. Maybe he was like low lottery.
But at the beginning of the season, the highest drafted player on the Raptors was Jonas Valanciunas. If Toronto takes out Philly, and let's say they get to the finals, that is the NBA will parade the Raptors to every GM who's an owner thinking of tanking, going, please don't tank and devalue the regular season and bleep with a season ticket holder base. Look at Toronto. Yes, it's an outlier. Yes, it's an outlier. But that's what's going to happen.
That's a really, really great point.
And I've been saving that for a week.
That is a really terrific point. My final question for you, although how much time do we have?
Oh, we got 14 minutes.
Okay, so we're good. So I'm watching Kawhi get mugged on his way to the tin last night.
Yeah.
And everybody says you call the game differently in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit tougher. And we hear all the time in the Leafs first round series, you know, the refs are going to put their whistle away. Guys are going to be allowed to get away with more out there.
Yeah.
I realized, I think that's bullshit.
Yeah.
That I used to sort of glamorize this idea of, oh, it gets tougher in the playoffs. That's men when the battle really heats up. Raw meat. And I thought, you know what? A penalty is a penalty.
Yeah.
Like, why on earth? Like, it's almost like you have to build two teams.
Yeah.
One that does well in the regular season and one that does well in the playoffs. And that's stupid.
It is stupid because, you know, the team that benefits from when you're calling the rules is the more skilled team. You know, and so now you're punishing this roster construction where it's about speed and skill and still some size, but you know, skill means more than almost anything else. And then it's like, come playoffs. Oh no, sorry. We're now going to level the playing field, and we're going to let you goon it up. Absolutely.
And maybe this mythology, like, you know, blocking shots, I'm okay with that. We discussed that, you know, because of the Mitch Marner block at the end of game two, and how if you did that during the regular season, A, everybody would get hurt, but B, it would be kind of boring because so many pucks just wouldn't get to the net.
Yeah.
So you have that aspect of it, but that's different than the refs calling the game differently.
Yep.
Like, is out of bounds different because it's the playoffs in football?
No.
Like, no. They don't suddenly go, well, still, you know, the wide receiver didn't get both feet in, but it's the playoffs.
It's the playoffs. Actually, that'd be great if the refs sided on the offense because, you know, versus, yeah, it's hurt Toronto, and it, just as a general philosophy, that stinks. It absolutely stinks.
So, quick question for you.
Yeah.
We got a little bit of time, and I think we should go back to the Leafs, but before we do, I want to ask you about the NFL draft.
Sure.
I'm reading a lot about the Giants and their intention to draft a quarterback at the sixth position.
Yes, Dwayne Haskins, Ohio State.
What are your thoughts on this?
I love the NFL draft because I get wildly emotional, angry, indignant, and happy when my team takes players or doesn't take players of whom I have seen play maybe a game or two. It is the greatest sports irresponsibility, intellectual irresponsibility, journalistic irresponsibility is the draft. I love it so very much.
I used to laugh how quickly you would run to Mel Kiper
day
after the draft.
Oh, I just, give me my grade, Mel. Give me my grade.
And how depressed you would get if it was B or lower.
Oh, yeah. And then like Chris Hunick and Todd Hayes from the show, we'd all be making fun of each other's teams because Mel Kiper gave the Chargers a C-. We're like, suck it, Todd. San Diego. God, it's so true. And now ESPN, every one of their mock drafts is behind the paywall. You got to pay to get it. I'm like, just give me one goddamn mock draft. I need some Todd McShay or Mel Kiper mock draft. Give me it. I need injected into my veins. God, I love the draft.
Okay, do you want to do Seat Giant, and then we'll do some Leafs and wrap up?
I don't do Seat Giant, Bob. I live Seat Giant. Let's say you want a ticket. You want to go see the Raptors close out Orlando.
How much time do we have left, by the way?
We got like 8-9 minutes.
Okay, so we'll have 4 minutes for the Leafs after you do 5 minutes of promo.
I don't do that. SeatGiant.ca is where you go for tickets. It's in Canadian dollars, Canadian owned, operated. They're a partner on the show. And if you use the discount code Bob and Matt at checkout, you will save a little bit of money, which is good because game 5, not going to be cheap. You save some money, we get a small kickback. Win-win. SeatGiant.ca. Discount code Bob and Matt.
Okay, so here's my Leafs question for you. We can take this one out.
Yeah.
Have the Leafs earned the right to not be switched up or changed or the object of panic from either the organization or the fan base based on the series so far?
See,
are you happy to let it ride based on what you've seen?
Here's the tough thing is that the Leaf players and management will tell you that the slide over the last 40 games, part of it's the malaise, they're getting ready for the playoffs and they know they're facing Boston. So their excuse for the last 40 games they basically played as a 500 level team is our focus is already drifting towards the playoffs. Okay, well, your focus drifted to the playoffs and you lose in the first round, bleep you. The other side is 4 to 7 games is a small sample size, and Boston's really good, and in these playoffs, all the good teams are losing, so you shouldn't take too much out of what we saw in the first round. So the answer to your question is, it's difficult.
You spend a lot of time with the fan base because you're on air, and you get tweets and calls and such.
Not calls, but tweets.
Okay. Do you think that the fan base will expect at least somebody's going to have to get whacked because of this?
Yeah. Yeah.
If they lose.
If they lose. You know, they replaced, you know, Albit, but for the playoffs, instead of Polak and Pekanic, you know, then
Carrick.
And it's now.
Although Carrick even playing last year's?
Yeah. But, you know, you brought in Tavares and you got in Muzzin. And you lost Kadri again, but you only lost him for three games last time. This is a better Leafs team than last year. It's a better team.
No, Boston's better. DeBrusk is a year better. Pasternak's a year better.
Yep.
They went out and got Coyle and Marcus Johansson.
And Charlie Coyle's been really good.
He's been really good. So I think you could say Boston's a year better.
Yeah, they are. It's a tough one because if you're Dubas, you go, well, Pittsburgh didn't win a game. Tampa didn't win a game. Winnipeg didn't win at home. They're all out. This is hard. So intellectually, I fully understand. Stay the course. Don't make any changes. I fully understand it. But if they lose, and especially in embarrassing fashion on Tuesday, I'm going to want a pound of flesh.
See, that's interesting you say that, because I think the question really comes down to how do they lose if they lose?
Style points, Bob. It's like in Miss America. Poise counts.
See, I'm not sure it should.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
And you can really F up your franchise by making emotional decisions.
Yeah.
I will never forget talking to Darren Dreger on the air. I've probably referenced this on the pod before.
Yeah.
After they won, going back a number of years now, and there was this big thought, or I should say they didn't win. They pushed
Boston to seven, the
right.
Castle.
Thank you.
The Castle.
Thank you. That was But there was this whole idea of the team's moving and we got to be active out there. And I said to him, well, what if it wasn't really anything but luck?
Yeah.
Like, what if they overperformed? Like, it was just one series.
It was a strike-shortened season or lockout-shortened season.
Right? And he said, well, it doesn't matter at this point. I'll never forget it. And I'll never know exactly what his motivation was for saying.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But the organization was convinced. Full steam ahead.
Yeah.
As opposed to, let's take it slow.
Yeah.
See what we got. And I don't know, under Shanahan and Dubas, if the team can be pushed out of that safety position.
No.
They've held the course pretty steadily.
Yeah. And I think they should. Here's the boring answer, but it's the one I believe. If I have to vote, I'm voting don't do anything drastic. It's, you know, it's this is a really good team that's going to just continue to get better. So I don't do anything drastic. If there was a way where you could get a legitimate top two defenseman
on the right side,
like, you know, that myth, like, so this is,
you mean
just
my Kadri to Carolina trade? Well, that I think is going to happen.
You're not going to get that level of defenseman for Kadri.
No, you're not.
If you can get that true elite, I'm using elite with a capital E, then you move Nylander. But I'm putting that at the 1% chance of something like that. If I have to vote, I vote stay the course. Because I am still, and I know I've been critical of him, I'm still a big fan of what William Nylander represents for the future. I don't forget what he did at 20 and 21, putting up 61-point seasons. Mm-hmm. That doesn't suddenly leave my head. But if you could get that elite-level defense, then yeah. But most likely, they stay the course.
Okay, so this is the other thing. It's style points. Mm-hmm. I also think if they blow it, and somebody has a particularly bad performance, like it's either Nylander, right? If he plays really, really badly, he'll be the new Jake Gardner.
Oh,
and that Jake had the tough, you know, -5 game to wrap up last game seven. And a certain section of fans never forgave him.
Yep.
Never forgave him. Despite the fact he has been the second best defenseman on the team. And at times during his stay, the best defenseman.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter because he had a bad game at the wrong time.
Yep.
I feel like if Nylander stinks out the joint, the cries to move him are going to be deafening.
They're going to be loud. They are going
to
be
People
loud.
People are prepared to hate him.
Oh, my God. Tuesday night.
I know.
There
should be nothing riding on Tuesday, but I feel like there is.
And you know, the thing is, like, I'm going to be watching that game via Twitter and with a TV behind me because I'm going to be at the ACC doing the pre and half and post for Raptors.
Oh, right.
Orlando.
Because they run at the same time.
They run at the same time. So Tuesday's going to be an interesting night for me. It's going to be.
No kidding.
Like, I feel like the Raptors are going to be up by 30. And it's going to be such a contrast. Like, at the ACC, all the Raptor fans, they're going to be doing
in their Leafs jerseys.
But the Raptor fans are just going to be like living life. Like, life is easy. Like, it's going to be a Jimmy Buffett concert for Raptor fans. Meanwhile, for the Leafs, it's going to be the middle of Winterfell. Like, that's the difference between those two fan bases on Tuesday night.
It's funny you say that because I wanted to end up with a game here.
Yeah.
Boston is the Night King,
yeah,
which makes Game 7 the Battle of Winterfell.
Yeah.
Who survives? if they lose. I'm going to throw out some names.
Yeah, do it.
Freddie Gauthier.
He'll only play 3 minutes. He survives.
Okay, I think he's gonzo if they lose.
Yeah.
Connor Brown.
Probably gone.
Gonzo.
Yep.
Here's a tough one. Ron Hainsey. If you could get him on a 1-year deal and you didn't have to play him with Morgan Riley on the top pair,
mm-hmm.
and you could put him on the third pair where he actually looked pretty good when he played would you keep him?
What
does he survive the Battle of Winterfell?
If at the end of the game, Mike Babcock says on the stack of Bibles, I promise he's on the third line.
Okay, I'm going to end off with the last one, the big one, okay? But we got one more before we get there. This one's complicated.
Yeah.
Zaitsev.
Zaitsev stays because I don't think anyone will take him.
He looks pretty good with Muzzin.
He does.
He looks pretty good.
Give that a spin next year. Give that a full spin next year.
If he stinks, his contract's horrible.
Yeah.
But if he's pretty good, his contract's not that bad. And I know that's an obvious point, but given the point about right-handed D,
it's funny how
it's
that
like
all works.
Left-handed relievers.
Yeah, it's true.
If you can be at least okay, there's always going to be a home for you.
Yep, that's true.
All right, last one, buddy. Yeah. Patrick Marleau. Does he survive the Battle of Winterfell if the Leafs lose?
Oh, God. No, but I don't know what you do with him. I don't know.
What do you do?
I just...
He's Bran. He just sits there and looks at you now.
Just sits there and stares at you. He's just... He's got to... You know, he's got to... I forget what it's called, but like back in the day, just when the Japanese soldier would kill themselves, you know, when they dishonored the troops or something. I'm mangling this historically. But I wish Marleau would just go to the team, go, put me on the fourth line.
Mm-hmm.
Put me on that fourth line. I will be the best fourth liner. I'll be the highest paid fourth liner, but I will be the best fourth liner.
Babcock's Ned Starking this. He's got his honor, and he's going to go down with the ship for his honor.
Yeah.
But if they lose this game and the third line stinks, people may get mad at Nylander,
but
the smart hockey people are going to blame Babcock for playing Marleau so much.
Absolutely. But does it matter?
And you know who's a smart hockey person?
Who?
His boss.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bo Shanahan. And by the way, Babcock's also a really smart hockey person, but much like King Lear, you know, sometimes he likes...
Tragic flaw.
Tragic. Yeah, the absolute tragic flaw. But Bob, it doesn't matter because the Leafs are winning on Tuesday.
I don't think so.
We leave this, much like the last episode of Game of Thrones, it's a cliffhanger, Bob.
And now the hooves walk into the foreground.
I know.
The lit fort.
Yeah.
The castle in the distance.
That's Maple Leaf Square.
Right.
And the hooves, there's like Bergeron and Pasternak and Marchand and Zdeno Chara. But I actually think Zdeno Chara is one of the White Walkers.
That's right.
Yeah.
And leave Marleau in the field for bait.
Yeah. Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt. Ch-ch-ca.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.